Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome. If you're looking for a story, a dose of the stranger than fiction side of the world we live in, then you've come to the right place. There are a lot of stories here to choose from, and today's is a new story that takes place in the snow-covered, deep cold of Antarctica, where a threat to mankind is growing, literally. This is part one of the story. When done, be sure to click into part two for the rest of the story. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web, taking on mysterious and outrageous jobs that no one else will or can. This is one of my adventures. Today is a journey into a mysterious place built and utilized by non-humans that needs to be cleaned out. Take a listen and enjoy. This request brought to me a popular subject, a place I know, and a desperate plea for assistance to protect the people and keep the integrity and secrecy of an ongoing project. At the time of this request, I've been in and out of meetings, in and out of the warehouse, and while out for one meeting, I got this request. I was sitting in a hotel room after a very long day. Ryder was with me. I brought her with me to a meeting because the request was right up her alley. It was our last night and we were flying home the next morning. And here comes another request. Something I've actually been very busy with lately because we have been in this 2020 situation for so long. I'm doing all my jobs this year for free. And let me tell you, word about that spread very quickly and has kept me very busy. Well, it turns out this job, this request, was a fairly urgent matter. This request came from an old contact of mine who I'll refer to as Elliot Beck. As you know, we have a very important group in the United States that deals with foreign intelligence. Well, there's a division within that group that deals with foreign intelligence of a very unique kind, extending to the really foreign, meaning alien. This is a special group that's not known to the public. And I know people wonder why they do that, but let me just tell you something. For certain things, they need to keep it that way, to keep conspiracy theories down, to keep leaks from happening, and to try to keep order. If people knew how many things go on there, they would, you know, they would show up. They would try to get into something. They would try to take something, spread rumors, hack something, try to get involved. It would be too chaotic for the situation to ever keep it under control or maintain any kind of relationships or learn and share information. Sometimes the secrecy is okay and it's actually a good thing. I mean, we all feel like, you know, we're people and we deserve to know it all. But maybe, just maybe, there are times when the project or information isn't solid enough. Agreements aren't hammered out enough to do that. Not to wait could ruin it all for future mankind. And you've heard, one kid could ruin it for the whole class. Well, there are a lot of those kids out there, unfortunately. And until things are in a place where contact can be managed in a way that makes sense, it really does need to stay this way. It will happen someday, just not yet. In this request, Mr. Beck tells me that he would like to meet with me to go over the job in person. The request had a very serious tone to it. I already know what his group does. This is going to have something to do with some being from somewhere else. What's happened, though, I have no idea. And it's not a surprise to me that he wants me to come where he is and to come alone. As with all of the projects that Elliot's a part of, they don't really like talking about them while out and about. And even though he knows the warehouse is completely secure, he still has to follow protocol. The only security his team relies on is their own. So I go to him. I get there, and when he and I get to the soundproofed room where we're safely locked inside, because yeah, things are that serious over there, we sit down at a table that's there, and he gets into it. He tells me that we are under a threat that is growing. His team did the best they could to try to figure out how long we have, but they cannot for sure know how long until this threat becomes something that we can no longer handle. They would like us to go in as soon as possible. The job would be for me and the team to go in and eliminate this threat. It needs to be destroyed. Elliot makes that very clear. He tells me that the threat is large, and he's not even sure exactly how he would go about it all, but he has faith in me and the team. Says he really wants to avoid putting in the military or any other government group because it could turn into a power play versus a safety move. And I think we can all get that point. And again, the sooner the better. Then he starts to explain what's been going on with one of their active projects and how it's connected to this new problem. Project ICE, he says. This project is unique to Antarctica. They put it out there, and although to the public, it's a project that is studying the effects of climate change on snow-covered Antarctica and the icebergs that surround it. But that's not what it really is. Like so many things, what's presented to the public is not always all or any of what something is. Project ICE means something completely different to Elliot's team. For them, ICE, I-C-E, stands for Intergalactic and Clandestine Extraterrestrials. ICE also, in this case, refers to the ice of Antarctica, and even more specifically, what lies beneath all that ice, which in this case, Elliot says, are the extraterrestrials that have caused the issue. And I've talked about Antarctica before, but this is an entirely different job and location, just so you know. Elliot goes on to explain that Earth has always been the target of welcomed as well as unwanted visitors. We know this. Antarctica has been for a long time a hub for this. And Project ICE came to be due to some unwanted activities by those of the unwanted kind. These are aliens that have been here before, he says, and that unfortunately the relationship between us and them is contentious. It's not that there may never be a need for a visit, but unnecessary visits by them are to be avoided. When I asked Elliot why that is, he tells me it's because they don't play nice and they cannot fully be trusted. And they've been up to no good once again, hence Project ICE. Elliot gets up and he's pacing back and forth, slowly, but you can tell that he's stressed out. And I mean, this guy's used to a lot of stress. And I can also see that he's thinking, sorting out what he wants to say. After he takes a deep breath, he continues. We go over some things that I already know because I've been in discussions about some of this in the past. The request has to do with these octagon-shaped structures not made by man that had been discovered underground in a certain area of Antarctica. These structures take up over 60 acres and go down as far as 2 miles. They are large. They are self-heating, and we apparently can't figure out how that's even happening. They have lighting. Can't figure out how that's happening either. And all we know is that they were put there a very long time ago. One theory as to what they're doing there is that they're abandoned ships, alien ships, that over time got buried by snow and ice. Or they were put there to serve a purpose, but we just don't know what that was. Whatever the original reason was for leaving those octagon structures where they are, doesn't matter because there's something new going on there now. It's been the job of Elliot's special group to check on and monitor these structures, keep an eye on them, make sure everything stays the same, no activity, basically. That everything is quiet, maintaining status quo, that there's no vandalism. I mean, you get it. The octagons are about 100 miles from the station where Elliot's based, and his team makes a trip out to the octagons twice a year to check on them, check on everything. And things have been as they should be for years. However, their last regularly scheduled check revealed that there has been activity, and they know It is activity brought on by the aliens that claimed the structures as their own many years back. And he's referring to those aliens that are highly encouraged not to visit Earth at all, the ones I mentioned earlier. Next, Elliot gets into how this all unfolded. Well, upon Elliot's last visit to the structures, last of his regularly scheduled visits, he and his team came across a project that has been started there, and he says it's not looking good. These structures, so you know, go down three levels, and according to Elliot, this project is on the lowest of them. And he tells me that these aliens have been busy, that structure, the lowest one, has been filled up with pods, alien pods. And this breaks an agreement between them and us. Any activity does. There are a lot of agreements around this stuff because we have to maintain some level of peace and order with them, just like we do with each other here on Earth. We are not using those structures, and they are not supposed to be using those structures either. Also, because of things that have happened in the past, they are supposed to notify our special group anytime that they come to Earth. Phoenix would know all about this. And if you're someone who isn't familiar with Phoenix, if you haven't heard any of my Phoenix stories, be sure to take a listen to those. They deal with the alien crash in New Mexico back in the 40s and the alien that survived. But anyway, Elliot and his team have discovered that these aliens have actually been using those structures for these pods. According to Elliot and his team, these aliens don't know that we have discovered these pods. Well, and if they have, they haven't done anything about it, which they would. They think that we, here on Earth, have pretty much just accepted that these structures are there and that they're not being used. We can't really get rid of them, but we didn't want to be using them either, really, because it would draw attention. So they stay dormant. As far as they know, we know that they're there, but we just leave them alone. We don't tell them that we check in on them. We're not in communication about them at all. But they are on our planet, and so of course we're going to check on them. That's our business, and we have every right to do so. We want to know, are they the same? Have they moved? Has anyone been there? Because only Elliot's special team should be. And as I said, they go there twice a year. That's 6 months in between each visit, which is a pretty good chunk of time, and plenty of time for them to come down, and we might not necessarily know, which is clearly what happened. We can't know how long exactly those pods have been there, and we can't even be 100% sure what's inside of them. Not yet. Since the discovery of the pods, Elliot's research team returns to the structures often now to check on everything. Part of their team also stays there, but they stay in a temporary structure outside of the octagons. That group does not go in, and they won't go in unless it's absolutely necessary. If they notice anything odd or they hear anything, they immediately contact Elliot. They just can't, you know, the people on this project, they can't have everyone and anyone just running around in there. It'd be less secure. What Elliot's team has been able to put together over a relatively short amount of time is that something is growing inside of these pods. Makes sense. And he tells me that they seem to be gaining size, about an inch every few days, and they're getting pretty big. Now, I'm listening to all of this, and I am fascinated. Not that any of what he's telling me is a good thing, but how interesting and bold of these aliens to set up shop like this right here on Earth, in a place they know that we know about. I want to see this. I ask Elliot for the footage of what they found. I mean, surely they filmed this for future reference or research. However, surprisingly, but then again not so surprising coming from this group, there is no footage. I mean, who doesn't film stuff these days, right? He doesn't even have a presentation around this stuff. What he does produce are pictures, physical pictures, of what they found. Out of a briefcase, he pulls out a folder filled with these pictures. His explanation for this actually does make sense. They want nothing digital on this project or what is found, discovered, or learned. In today's world, there is too big of a risk that the information would get leaked. Why? Because people are suckers for money. It could get hacked, again, because people want things to get money for them. You know, things like that. So no sending of anything over emails or any other way. They only have in-person meetings, and they keep the whole thing very close to them. And I can understand that. So to the pictures. As we go through them, he explains what I'm looking at. These almost wet-looking, egg-shaped, darker in color pods fill the floor of this large room. Tells me there are 100 of them. And in these rooms, guys, there's nothing else. There are no tables, no rooms, chairs, cupboards, anything. There are just these lit up characters along the wall, hieroglyphs, if you might be able to say. They're on the walls and they're lit up, and that's part of the lights that they can't explain. He tells me that the structure itself is always kept at a comfortable temperature. And as I said, they have no idea how that happens. But this area, this particular area where the pods are, that's being kept at an even warmer temperature. I guess that's what the pods need. Elliot has been using ultrasound technology to try to see what's inside those pods. But last he checked, they weren't far enough along to see what they were going to end up as. They can't quite tell yet what the result will be. It's a little different than when, say, a pregnant woman gets an ultrasound. You know what you were looking for because you know the outcome. Boy, girl, you have a heart, head, hands. We can pretty much figure out what stage the baby is in growth. Very different here because we have no clue what's inside. All they can see is a balled up shape. Elliot tells me that they were able to get a sample of the pod membrane. They very carefully scraped and dug just enough to get a very small sample. Says the membrane appears to be thick and like a strong woven mesh that is held together by this thick goo. Sounds nice. But this goo acts like a glue, he tells me, solid enough to prevent any permeation of whatever the liquid-like substance is that appears to be on the inside. The pod moved a bit when he went for that sample, but the membrane is thick, and so Elliot didn't feel like he disturbed much, not really. Although he does admit that he felt a little bit of that risky tension of whatever is on the inside just exploding out of the pod and attacking him. But it didn't, and he was lucky enough to get away with that sample. I'm still going through the photos, and I'm looking around, and I realize that I don't see any power source for these pods. How are they feeding to grow, or what's powering them to thrive? And I ask Elliot about this, and then he points out that they appear to be getting their energy from inside the boxes they are in. Well, they're in them, and they're kind of on them, and I did notice that each one of the pods is sitting on a big silver box, which looks pretty thick. Then Elliot points out that inside that box, there seems to be a substance from which the pods are feeding. And sure enough, if you look closely, it looks as if the pods, it almost looks like they grew from a planted seed or something. And then whatever the silver substance is that's in those pots is like the dirt. And it would have to be a very vitamin-filled or energy-filled dirt to do the job, but it's doing it. I mean, these things are not small. Aside from those boxes, though, and the pods and their own situation, there is nothing else. Elliot reiterates that the boxes are it, and they're being fed, in a sense, while inside the boxes. It's all self-contained. And I mean, that's pretty good. Try growing a human from special dirt. Yeah, we are not there yet. From under our meeting table, Elliot breaks out this little black box that has a handle on the top, and he tells me that that's the sample that he got while he was on the inside. And his sample is now my sample to study. But he warns me not to open it until we're ready to work on it and says he's also going to give me the settings for the box because it's temperature and humidity controlled. These instructions, he says, are all included in my folder. A folder he breaks out next from his briefcase, telling me that all the pictures and information he has for me, they're in that folder. He slides both the box and the folder to me. We end up going over a few more things before I go, and I learn that they want, and we all need, these pods and whatever is inside of them to be completely destroyed. Destroyed in a way that they will never be able to reform, that they will never have any life or energy to them at all. Broken down so far that what is left can actually be removed, cleaned up. So the next time these aliens come down to check on their pods, Elliot wants no evidence of them. Never to have existed. So there are two reasons why we need to move fast. One, we don't know what the heck is happening here, and we know we don't want whatever's on the inside of these things to get out. Two, we don't know when the aliens will be back, and we want it all gone whenever they do come back. Once we are done, he will need every photo, the sample, all information back and accounted for. And for this, we have an agreement. I agree not to share any evidence of what I find and what's going on with anyone but the team, and to turn in anything and everything given to me or anything that we obtain. Can't make copies of anything, keep recordings of anything, or share any physical evidence from the scene and job. I can use my resources, any that I might need, as long as they don't know exactly what I'm doing or why, or what we are really dealing with. Have to. I get it and I understand, and I feel the urgency. We wrap up our meeting and I head back to the warehouse where my team is waiting for me. They're waiting for me, but they're also waiting for the next job. But they're keeping busy. I come back and I find Frankie and Jagger, they're working out, Scarlett's reading, and Harley's doing yoga. I mean, they're all passing the time, really. But they know all about these structures just as I do. And when I tell them that we have a problem with them, they're immediately interested. They stop what they're doing and we all gather over by the couches for a meeting. We all know that any information on these things that is coming to us must be important, because before this, these octagons just sat there really unused with their unexplained heat and lights. But now we have some action. I go over everything that Elliot went over with me, and then we need to get some work done. One of the first stops is to hit one of the research and development labs that I use. This lab is for people that work behind the scenes only. The average Joe or someone in government, for instance, can't hire them. They front as a different establishment, but downstairs, that's where the magic happens. You'd never know it was there. The store above is fully functional and running when open. Ryder and I head over there to look at the sample Elliot gave me. I want to look at it with them together, and then I will leave it with them. I'm looking to them to help me with how to dissolve these pods, stop them, or get rid of them somehow. I want nothing left but maybe cleanup, like Elliot said. It's my ideal wish, but we'll have to wait and see, though, you know, what they come up with. When Ryder and I get there, we are escorted to the lab below the store, where I'm greeted by my contact, who I'll call Oscar. Oscar with a K, because it fits who he is. Oscar is actually the younger of the two in the dynamic duo that run this lab. The older of the two, who I'll call Fritz, started up his first lab over 30 years ago when he was young. He was very excited about the possibilities of science and chemistry, and he wanted to see what he could do. And he's been making crazy and very useful things ever since. He's the same as he was back then. He's just older. But together, he and Oscar make a great team. Oscar, now in his life, is where Fritz used to be, and his energy, along with Fritz's knowledge, is a pair that you don't and won't meet every day. The stuff they have done is pretty unbelievable, and they have more they will do. And I'm there to see what they can do for me on this job. I explain to them what I need. I have the settings in which this material can survive that I got from Elliot, and I give those to him as well. Fritz takes that and the box over to a glass cube, and Oscar, Ryder, and I follow him. It's one of those cubes or glass boxes where you can put your hands in the gloves and then feel and touch whatever's inside. The cube is fit with its own controls, and I see Fritz is punching in the settings from Elliot, and he sets the box down that I brought into the cube, shuts the cube, and then seals it, and we wait for the green light. When we get the green light, he puts his hands in the gloves and starts to open the box, per instructions. Finally, I can see what Elliot gave us. It's not that big. I know Elliot didn't want anyone to be able to surmise, maybe get it right, what the sample's from, which, I have to tell you guys, Fritz and Oscar gave up asking me about things like that a long time ago. They know the stuff that I'm working on. The box was about 6 inches by 4 inches, and the sample, I'd say, it's tucked away safely inside, it's only about 3 inches by 2 inches. According to Elliot, that sample should be enough. If we can make what he has given us go away, then we will be good to go. And these guys know exactly what I mean. Our mission is elimination. Fritz takes the sample out of the box, sets the box to the side. It's what I saw in the picture. Fritz is instantly almost mesmerized by this thing. And I have to say, Ryder, Oscar, and I were right there with him. And Fritz is no dummy. He doesn't need to say anything or look for answers. I mean, it's pretty obvious. This thing is not local, if you know what I mean. After we all stare at it for a while as he moves it around and sets it down and flips it over and, you know, things like that. I can tell that he's ready to get into it. He's excited and anxious to get moving. Ryder and I thank him again, and Oscar, and we leave them to their scientific and chemistry bliss. While they work on that, back at the warehouse, we're preparing ourselves for what we need on our end, and while Ryder and I were at the lab, the rest of the team did a really good job of putting together what we need. And I'm not going to really say how many days it took, but we were ready in very good time, and we didn't have to wait too long before I get a call from Fritz. They're ready for us. And by us, I mean the whole team. Instead of going over instructions twice, we're all going this time to hear it all one time. And on our way over, we're all pretty excited to see what they came up with. They've never let us down before. Back in the lab, and with all of us sitting around this oval table in a meeting room, Oscar hands me a can. And he tells me that it's filled with an original and unique blend of different things. In the can is a gas. He tells us to think of it as a smart gas. Says that they've created this little concoction to target all the cells and materials provided to him in the sample. He assures me that what is in those cans will get the job done. It will destroy what we are after. We obviously are curious as to what it will do to us, because we will be there also. But aha, he says, that's the beauty of it. And he tells us to think of a plant as a very, very simple example. It's clearly more complicated than a plant. But they take in carbon monoxide, and that's great for them as they convert it and use it to thrive. However, if we were to only breathe carbon monoxide, we would die. I mean, sealed in a plastic bag, we would eventually be unable to breathe. The alien cells are extremely different than ours, and the gas is meant to target them, not us. So aside from filling the room up with a great fog, he says, we will be unaffected. And there's no need to doubt Fritz. He knows exactly what he's doing every single time. He then sets a filled can down, and then he produces an empty one, and he proceeds to give us a demonstration of how these cans work. And so you can picture them, they're black, they're made of steel, and they looked like, well, like those steel drums. You know, they have 55-pound ones, 85-pound ones for transporting liquids and other bulk materials. And you might have seen them on a crime show or two as well. Well, they're like that, only the size of maybe an average water bottle, but a little bigger in diameter. We take in the demonstration of how they work and the instructions and procedures to follow in setting them up for use. We go over quite a few other things as well. We also go over the best plan of getting this job done. When we're done with the meeting, Fritz gives me my information and my sample box, all set correctly once again, back. With all of our new cans packed up and ready to go and our information returned, we load up in our truck and head back to the warehouse. We don't really have time to sit around and express our appreciation at the time, you know, to Fritz and Oscar, but you should know that whenever they help us with jobs like this, we always circle back to them when the job is done. We let them know how the job went, and sometimes our feedback actually helps them improve their process, but we always go back and thank them for their work. Okay, so we're packed and now armed in a few different ways, and it's off to Antarctica we go. Other than the small facts of how cold it is upon arrival, how small the group is that actually works at our destination station, and how desolate the whole place is, there's not much to say about our travel or arrival. When we get there, though, we are met by a man who knows who I am, even though I don't know who he is. He just nods to me and says his name is Igor. Then he says we can drop our bags and things that we brought. We do that, and then these other guys come and load themselves up with all of our stuff. And then they just go off to the side and they wait. Igor asks us to follow him. And, I mean, there's nothing special about this place. It's a very simple metal building. And then on the inside, it's a fairly rugged experience. The feeling of it, you know, is not exactly warm. They have the basics, table, chairs, for instance, but there's not a lot of character. So we make our way past the common areas and the on-site workers' bunk rooms, and at the end of the main hall, Igor punches in a code and unlocks the thick door. We head down a flight of stairs, Igor in the front, and our baggage handlers, they're in the back of us. When we get down, he has to unlock another door for us to pass through, and beyond that door, everything changes. You might as well be in a downtown office. There are people working down there, and we learn that this group rarely, if ever, interacts with the group above. They are there for entirely different reasons. After a trip down a couple of long hallways, we are brought to a room, and inside is Elliot and one other gentleman. Elliot and I exchange our hellos, and then he introduces us to a Mr. Wilcock. Mr. Wilcock shakes our hands and tells us to go ahead and just call him Jameson. Jameson Wilcock. He runs the project that Elliot manages. The project I mentioned earlier, Project ICE. Now that we're actually going in, we have more evidence agreements to sign. I mean, it's a pretty big deal that nothing get out. Nothing of evidentiary value, that is. And we do that no problem. I mean, hearing about these agreements, you might want to ask, well, then why and how am I telling you guys this story even? Well, that's because that's part of my deal with these things. My deal is that I can do that. I mean, telling a story is not sharing evidence, but it can open people's eyes, which is why I do this. I have the okay to put the idea into someone's head without handing over firsthand evidence. Make sense? It's the same with all my stories that I share. And again, the non-believers will always well overbalance the believers. So it's never really seen as a threat. A story isn't dangerous. Evidence is. We cannot take things like pictures for ourselves or take them to share them with anyone else or take a piece of anything that goes on back with us. No evidence, no physical items that someone who could have real influence on or get in the way of this special team in their work, like Project ICE. So we agree to everything that they ask for. And then it's time for our mission to begin. And that concludes part one of Alien Pods of the Antarctica Octagons. Click into the link in the description and continue the journey on to part two.